Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we're back with the Chip Williams podcast. It's been a long time since we've recorded one. Really no great reason. There've been plenty of things to talk about. I guess I just haven't carved out the time, but this seems like as good a time as ever to kind of fire it back up and get it going. There with me is one of the senior staff writers at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. You can also find him at literally any other website that you can write about basketball. He probably has either written something for them, currently writes for them. I don't know. This guy does everything. He even worked in college basketball. Andrew Ford. Mr. Ford, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Chip?
Fantastic. I appreciate you coming on with us today, coming on with me, I guess. I say us. There's nobody. It's just me and you. So, listen, the Memphis Grizzlies have had a very exciting offseason, I guess it's fair to say. One that if you had told me this is the way it was going to play out, even, you know, a day before the draft, I think just about anyone connected to the team, fan of the team, covers the team, whatever, I think they would have taken that in a heartbeat, the way that things have kind of played out. I mean, it's been kind of an ideal scenario, you know, the way that the draft played out, the way free agency has played out. And I want to start with the draft because I know that both of us get way too into the draft. I mean, I'm totally fine with you and I just straight up draft geeking out. I know it's a little bit in the past, but let's just do it. Like, I don't even care. Like, this, nobody's had like a great Grizzlies draft recap, so that's what you and I are here to do. And let's start with Wade Baldwin at the 17th pick. This draft played out like completely differently than the 2015 draft played out, because if you'll remember back to the 2015 draft, there were maybe seven guys with seven picks to go before the Grizzlies picked. And I said, one of these guys has to fall, right? Like, somebody's going to reach for somebody. And, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or Justin Anderson or Tyus Jones, somebody is going to get pushed down to the Grizzlies. And it just happened where boom, 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 all those seven guys went back to back to back to back. And so the Grizzlies ended up taking Jarrell Martin. Well, this year they had their pickings. I mean, there were tons of guys that everybody thought were going to be lottery picks, top 15 guys, some even top 10 guys that were available there for the Grizzlies at 17. But obviously they end up going with Wade Baldwin, someone I know that you're very familiar with. You wrote the scouting report on him for Upside Motor. I know you keep up with SEC basketball a fair amount. Just before we get into specifics of Wade Baldwin, just based on who is left on the draft board, what do you think about the pick at 17?
I think Grizzlies fans have a lot to be happy with in Wade Baldwin. I think he was in the top tier of guys the Grizzlies could have taken who were still on the board. I had him right up there with – I really like Timothy Luwawu. He's a guy I really like, and I also like Malik Beasley, who just went two slots below where the Grizzlies got Wade Baldwin. But, I mean, honestly, if you would have told me that the Grizzlies could get Wade Baldwin without moving and just select him at 17 where they did, I don't see how you can't be happy with that pick. He's great value there. He would have been great value, I mean, at 12, 13, where he was originally being mocked. I mean, it's like you said, it's a bit weird to be in this position where Wade Baldwin fell all the way to 17. It's not something the Grizzlies have gotten lucky enough to have happen to them in the past couple seasons.
Right.
And it's, you know, there's, like I said, there's just a lot to like about him. He's very versatile. He'll fill in a lot of holes. And I think he's a guy who can come in and maybe contribute earlier than a lot of other draft picks the Grizzlies have, you know, had in recent history.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do want to ask you this. So something in my scouting of Baldwin, and I completely agree. I think that Baldwin, if a team had selected him kind of in the back half of the lottery, even beginning around 9 or 10, I wouldn't have had any trouble with it. Like, I wouldn't even have felt that as a reach. I thought that's the type of talent that he had. I thought he was pretty clearly the second best projected point guard in this draft. I mean, I guess some people think Jamal Murray's a point guard, whatever. I don't think he's a point guard. I think he's much more of a two guard, but really after Chris Dunn, I thought Wade Baldwin was going to be the second best point guard. And really of that second tier of point guards, he was the one that I thought maybe could one day, if everything kind of worked out the right way, eventually turn into a starter and a decent starter. And I think at worst case, he's probably going to end up being a good backup. But noticing him, you know, watching him play, he struggles a little bit in the pick and roll. His point guard skills are not where you want them to be. And I know as someone who worked with Bruce Pearl at Tennessee, obviously that's something that you've been around a lot. You've been around guys who maybe were a little bit raw as a particular skill. How easy is it for someone like a Wade Baldwin to learn how to not pick up his dribble at the inopportune times in a pick and roll, or get more comfortable in situations like that? Just things that a normal NBA point guard's asked to do. Because at this point, I still think he's more of a combo guard that you hope one day develops those point guard skills.
Right. Well, you know, a coach is going to have to get with him, and basically he's going to have to be forced to not pick up his dribble. The coach is going to have to tell him, look, it's okay if you get into the paint and make a few bad decisions along the way of your learning process. It's something where, like you said, you're around the corner and you're taught to explode off of that big hip or shoulder,
right,
whichever one, and that's something he doesn't do a whole lot. He just kind of, his dribble stagnates a little bit. He just kind of stands upright and just kind of sits there waiting, you know, reading the floor, which is fine sometimes, but a guy as big and physical as him, you'd really like to see him utilize that strength, get to the rim, get fouled, get to the free throw line. That's really where his best use is going to be in the NBA, is if somebody can teach him how to explode in that pick and roll. And it is a matter of, it's just going to take a coaching staff that's willing to be patient with him, willing to say it's okay if you dribble in, get a charge call, or, you know, throw the ball out of bounds trying to find an open wing in the corner. It's patience has to be there. He's a young guy. He's still learning. But if you yank him right when he does that, that's just going to reinforce his behavior. And that's what happens with a lot of these young guys. They come in the NBA and they're not ready for that. They're not ready for, you know, the no mistake mentality that a lot of these teams and coaches have. And hopefully David Fizdale, having been under Eric Spoelstra, who I think quite a bit of, and I think he's pretty good at developing talent. Hopefully Fizdale learned a lot from him and will be patient with Wade Baldwin. And there's really no reason not to be, because if you can take his skill set where it is now and extrapolate it to where it could be, man, he could really be something special. Just got to work with him, got to get in there. Starting, of course, tomorrow with Summer League.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that, because that's something that has been my number one frustration with the Grizzlies over, I don't know, the last 6-7 years, easily dating back to the Lionel Hollins era, was these guys, these rookies that they would bring in, sometimes even second-year players, their leashes were so short that they weren't being allowed to play through their mistakes. Even if they got on the floor at all, period. Like, these guys aren't just going to magically develop into NBA players. Like, you have got to throw them out on the floor in meaningful minutes sometimes and let them play through their mistakes. Let them learn how the NBA works. Let them learn that, hey, this is the next step up. Like, the game is a little bit faster from college to the NBA, just like they had to learn coming from high school, hey, you know, the game's a little bit faster from high school to college. And that's just, I don't know, that's something that has always been so frustrating with the Grizzlies. And you hope with the new regime coming in, like you mentioned, David Fizdale, that's something he's known for. He's known as a really good guy who's able to build great relationships with players and help maximize their talent, help develop them into good NBA players. So that's what gives me hope with Wade Baldwin. Now, I want to continue with Baldwin and just ask a little bit about his fit on this year's team, because I think the way that things are shaking out, and obviously I don't think free agency is done, and we'll get more into that a little bit later on, but as it is right now, there's a pretty big hole at the two-guard spot, and really backup point guard for that matter as well. There's going to be an opportunity, I think, for Wade Baldwin to really carve out a role. How do you think David Fizdale should use him this year? I'll leave that open. How do you think he should use him?
I think he's got to play spot minutes off the bench, of course. I don't really see him getting any starting minutes. I see him playing a lot in a two-guard role, maybe in some lineups with Mike Conley, you know, more the most established guard ball handler in the Grizzlies lineups. I think it's something, you know, get his feet wet, get him some touches as a secondary ball handler in the pick and roll. Let him p- pick and choose his spots, let him spot up, let him run off of screens, just kind of learn the system and the flow of the NBA game. But it's like you said, the minutes, no matter the role, are important because he will learn
right.
something from those minutes, whether that's going to be his role from his rookie season all the way through his career or whether that role is going to change drastically. He's going to learn a lot with playing time. And so they've got to find a way to get him out there. They've got to get him out there, you know, I think about 15-plus minutes a game. And that's doable. I don't see why it's not doable. Like you said, there should be plenty of minutes as a backup point guard or as two. It's funny because we've spent so much time talking about the Grizzlies' whole, you know, at the three position, and now you look at the roster and really the biggest hole is at the two. I mean, the only maybe true shooting guard projected to be on the roster is Jordan Adams, and projected to be on the roster, I'm
right.
using that kind of loosely. I mean, he could not be there come the start of this coming season. And
Stop, you're going to make me cry on the podcast.
Well,
I'm not ready to cut the ties.
Well, that goes back to our point. The Grizzlies, they don't know what they have in Jordan Adams, and part of that is injury related.
Right.
Part of that, I think, is a little bit of misuse. I don't think he came into a situation where the path to playing time was very clear for him. That was when the Grizzlies had kind of a logjam of wing players, and it hasn't been a productive situation for him, and it's just been one setback after another, and now here we are, and the Grizzlies are forced to almost make a decision on him, and they really have no basis as far as playing time, meaningful minutes goes, to make that decision. And that's the frustrating thing that, you know, people
right.
have been just taken aback by, and hope doesn't happen to Wade Baldwin, Deonta Davis, some of these other young guys who could come in.
Yeah, you're right. It is frustrating. That could go off on a whole Jordan Adams tangent about how Vince Carter was hurt a couple of seasons ago, and there was no reason to throw him out there because he could he move up and down the court. So why not just give Jordan Adams the 10, 12 minutes, whatever Vince Carter was playing, and see what happens. That didn't happen. Obviously, at this point, I'm not sure how you can count on Jordan Adams being a part of your roster even for next season. Like, at this point, there's almost no reason to even pick up his fourth option other than it's so cheap. But if for any reason you need that roster spot, like, there's no guarantees. And it's sad as it is to say, there's really no guarantees with Jordan Adams at this point. I hate to see it. You hate to see any injury any career derailed by injuries. But especially one that never even really got the chance to get off the ground after, you know, a pretty promising, you know, start, I guess. The minutes we got to see, whether it was D-League, whether it was NBA, even, you know, his college game, like, you could see kind of a rough outline of a pretty good NBA two guard, you know, even if he was just a bench player, at least a bench scorer. So, I don't know. I don't want to get off on it too bad of a Jordan Adams tangent, because I do want to ask you about Wade Baldwin's jump shot. How much belief do you have in that translating to the NBA? Because it is a little weird. It's kind of like if Kevin Martin raised his jump shot up about 6 inches. It might not be that bad, but it's weird.
No,
it's weird.
It is like that. It's a little bit herky-jerky. I don't love it. Of course, you look at the percentage. The percentage is fine. He can knock them down at a consistent rate. I wonder, you know, about some of I wonder about links closing out on him. I wonder about how that will affect him.
Yeah, that's what worries me.
He's not as great of a three-point shooter as I think people make him out to be. I think people look at percentages and say, oh, he's great, he's fine. But, you know, if you look at him within the flow of Vanderbilt's offense, I don't know how he's going to get those threes at the NBA level. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's just I don't know that that's going to be there for him. I don't know how he's going to look curling off of screens and, you know, on zipper cuts popping
right.
the top of the key, things like that. I don't know that he's got quite the turn and shoot quick stroke like that that a lot of two guards need to have. But, of course, we're kind of in a wait-and-see phase, and
sure.
I mean, I tend to be optimistic about it, though. Like I said, the percentages are there. His shooting stroke is all right. At least it's consistent for the most part. If your shooting stroke, if your form is not perfect, I'm okay with it as long as you're shooting the same shot 9 times out of 10, which I think he has and does. So I'm okay saying he'll be all right shooting the three at the next level. I don't think he's going to be near 40%. I think you might as well go ahead and pencil him in as being an average three-point shooter in that 35%, maybe 36% range, which is still,
okay,
you know, that's decent. That's enough to be able to space the floor,
yeah,
which is very valuable for a team like the Grizzlies, who seems to always be hurting for floor spacers.
No, you're right. I do wonder, because to your point, the way that Vanderbilt kind of played, Baldwin got a lot of really good catch-and-shoot opportunities, and which makes me think he can play with Mike Conley, and that would benefit both of them. Because we've all talked about for years that Conley's catch-and-shoot game is really good. It's just like he is having to play with Tayshaun Prince and Tony Allen or something, like guys that necessarily you wouldn't trust as being, you know, your secondary ball handler. We can play Mike off the ball. That's what was so great about having Mario Chalmers for the brief time both those guys were healthy. You could put two ball handlers on the floor at one time. And I think now with Wade Baldwin, even Andrew Harrison, who some, you know, are projecting will make the roster, both those guys, Baldwin and Harrison, are big and long enough to be able to defend twos and also handle the ball to put Mike off the ball. So I think that's a mutually beneficial thing. And I do see what you're saying with that. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see with Baldwin. Overall, I like the pick. I don't know about you. I mean, you seem pretty high on him, right? Like coming out, you seem
high
on him.
I am high on it. I just think in today's NBA, versatility is the name of the game. And he can play multiple positions on both sides of the ball. He can slot into the one and two on offense. And I think he's got a little bit more versatility than just being able to guard ones and twos defensively. He's so physical. He's so long that I think he can honestly – I mean, I'm not saying he's going to defend like Tony Allen, because you know I hate player comparisons, but I do think he'll be able to defend some ones, twos, and even some threes like Tony Allen is able to slide over and fill some of those roles. And that's so important in today's game, like I said. And he's going to be able to do that. I have full faith in him on the defensive end, and I think that's where his value will lie early in his career, and I think that will keep him on the court, and his offensive game hopefully will come along sooner rather than later. Not that his offensive game is just too far behind, but I think it definitely needs more work than his defensive game. But he's a guy, he can be a change of pace guard. I like you said, I like him next to Mike Conley. I like him much more in catch-and-shoot situations, coming off screen. I don't know about him ever being that great of a shooter with the ball in his hands, which makes me wonder about his ceiling as an actual legitimate bona fide point guard, just because I'm not sure he's ever going to be a guy who's just going to come off of a pick, and if his guy goes under, he's just going to sit behind and be able to pull or have that wherewithal or even want to do that. That's not really his game right now, and he's not really a guy who's trying to shoot jumpers off the dribble. He tries to get to the hole, which is efficient, and that's great, but he needs to be able to mix some more tricks into his bag and be able to do a few more things with the ball in his hands. But like I said, starting early, I think it'd be smart to play him off the ball, play him with established ball handlers and players like Conley, get him some minutes with Gasol, let him play and operate off of those guys, see where things progress.
Okay, yeah, so we're definitely on the same page there. I too have some questions that he's going to have to answer about whether he can legitimately be a point guard in the NBA, because there's just, like you talked about, the shooting off the dribble. He's not great coming off pick and rolls. He just picks up his dribble sometimes. Like, I don't know if he gets nervous and so he just immediately picks up his dribble, but one of the first things basketball coaches will tell you to do is don't pick up your dribble unless you know exactly what you're about to do. Am I right? Like, that's what they say.
No, that's,
so
that's exactly
like,
right.
Yeah.
You know, they harp on that all day in practice, and it's something that I think – I have said this on Twitter before, but I think part of the issue is at Vanderbilt, for as good as Jones was and Cornette, you know, they were good in their roles. They weren't great screeners for Baldwin. Sometimes they didn't hold their screens long enough. They didn't get the angles right. They were a little too flat for him. Allowed his guy to fight through and kind of regain position quicker than he should have been able to. And I think that kind of made him pick up his dribble a little bit. That doesn't fully excuse his, you know, inability to slash all the way to the rim. I think some of it is a tentativeness there that doesn't need to be there. But I think with, you know, guys like Marc Gasol playing with guys who are adept screeners and really understand the angles that they need to get right, I think you're going to see maybe a different guy attacking. And I think hopefully, of course, Fizdale will watch the tape. Fizdale will figure out how he needs to use him. Wade Baldwin, something I think he's really good at is he's very instinctual about knowing when to split screens, and he's very good at it, particularly at the top of the key. And the angle on pick and rolls at the top of the key matters less than it does on the wing, if that makes sense. It's much easier because he can go both ways, much more space. He can go left or right. But if you're on the wing, I mean, you're being funneled one way. I mean, that screen needs to be right.
Right.
So I'm just hoping Fizdale puts him in more situations like that where he can succeed and kind of ease into things a little bit.
No, that's a great point. And someone who is very good at setting screens is Jermichael Green. And so I'm kind of interested to see those two guys play together in the summer league. I want to move off Baldwin because, honestly, we've spent 20 minutes talking about him, and I could probably go another 20 minutes. But we think, number one, he's a devastating one-on-one defender, Wade Baldwin. We think the jump shot's probably going to be there. Okay, so let me ask you this, and then we will move on. Worst case, is he a 3-and-D bench combo guard?
I think so. I have a little more hope for him than that. Worst case scenario for sure. I think he's going to have a role in the NBA. I think he's going to be enough of a defensive menace to find minutes no matter where he goes, whether that's in Memphis or somewhere else on the road, hopefully in Memphis, but we'll see. But I think there are enough tools there to keep him on the court.
Okay, perfect. We agree. Let's move on to Deonta Davis. The way the Grizzlies got him is obviously, pretty much if you're listening to this podcast, you know, but just to recap it very quickly, they swapped their 2019 Clippers pick to Boston for the 31st pick, 35th pick. They got Deonta Davis and Rade Zagaracha. I have no idea if I'm saying that right. I'll say it a few more times throughout this podcast, so just make fun of me if I'm not. But Deonta Davis, 31st pick. Andrew, this is the guy I had as a top 10 prospect on my big board. I was stunned when this guy started falling. No, excuse me, I did not. I had him at 13. Okay, I'm sorry. I had him at 13. But I remember saying specifically on a couple of different radio hits that I did before the draft that if there was one player that it wouldn't shock me if he jumped into the top 10 that's not really being mocked there consistently, it was Deonta Davis. I just thought that there were so many things to like about this guy's game. And then I guess you start digging a little bit. Some questioned his motor. Some question, you know, you listen to him speak. He's very soft-spoken. It's almost like he doesn't even want to be talking. It was strange. The few times I've actually heard him speak, so I don't know if maybe some interviews turned some teams off, but whatever the reason, there was no reason, in my opinion, that Deonta Davis should have slipped out of the first round, and I thought it was a gift at 31 that he was there. So just real quick, your thoughts on Deonta Davis slipping out of the first round and then him landing to the Grizzlies.
I was shocked with him slipping all the way out of the first round. His upside is definitely warrants him being picked in the first round. With that said, I guess some might have been scared away by his raw, really raw offensive talent. Maybe his – I can't personally attest to his motor without seeing more of him. He looked fine in that regard from the Michigan State games I watched, but you don't really know until you know the kid or you see him in workouts, things like that. It's hard to extrapolate what he's going to be able to do, particularly offensively, at the next level. And maybe that is where the questions really arise from you know, scouts and other teams who passed on him is just, where does he fit? What is he? Honestly, so many of his points are on offensive rebounds and on alley-oops. He almost plays sometimes offensively just like a massive small forward. It's really strange.
Yeah,
like, he cuts to the basket. He does things like that. He's not just particularly strong with the ball in his hands with his back to the basket. But, again, I think he's very raw. I think he needs to be put in a strength and conditioning program in the NBA, which he will be. And that should help him tremendously put some muscle on that frame. And it's something – I am shocked, though. I mean, it's a great pickup for the Grizzlies at 31. It's – great upside and plenty to work with. Of course, it's upsetting that we're already having to talk about an injury with him. It seems like the Grizzlies can never just pick somebody who is injury-free and just able to go on their merry way and develop fine. I can't fathom how this continues to happen.
Can we just draft one freaking guy that's healthy? Like, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Just one guy that's like, please, Wade Baldwin, don't get hurt. Like, just let's draft one freaking guy that can actually play in the summer league and then play his rookie year. That'd be great. I would love that because it makes it more fun. I love watching these young guys play. But no, listen, to your point about him kind of playing small, and that's something that I actually kind of liked about him. He moves so well. Like, he is a legitimate 6'11", 240 pounds. He's huge, but he glides. I mean, that's what I like about the way he plays. Like, you can easily see him being a rim runner in the NBA if the motor's there. Like, that's something you have to want to do. You have to want to go beat your man down the court and get the right position. And that way, you know, you see Zach Randolph do that. And that's not a guy that you would expect to be a rim runner, but he all the time is just beating a guy down the court, getting the position, and gets an easy little flip hook shot that we've seen him do 100 times. That's something that I think Davis certainly has the potential to do. I saw several times, and just watching, I kind of did a very quick deep dive on him once the Grizzlies drafted him, because he wasn't a guy that I did a ton of scouting on just because, number one, I didn't think there was any chance he'd be there at 17. I thought there was very little chance he'd be there at 17. But number two, even if he was, I just didn't see any reason the Grizzlies would take him. Like, it's a good value pick at 17, but there's no reason for them to take him at 17. At 31, it's a no-brainer. Like, you just have to. The value is way too good, especially on a non-guaranteed contract like the second rounders get. You know, or, you know, it's not on the rookie wage scale. So, but a lot of times you saw what he did at Michigan State. Like, they would have him up in the high post. Someone would come set a back screen, and then he would roll to the basket, and they'd throw him an alley-oop. Like, the guy makes plays that normal 6'11", 240-pound guys aren't able to make. And I do want to ask you about what he can do offensively. So, basically, the two things I saw him do, he's got a right-handed hook shot that's got some pretty decent extension, and he's got a pretty good wingspan, so I think that'll continue to develop. And I actually think his shooting mechanics are good. They're raw, but I think they're good, and good enough to maybe develop a 15-footer one day down the road.
I agree. His shooting mechanics are good for a big man. They're, you know, it's kind of a quick pull, quick trigger motion. It's not too dissimilar from the way Mark Gasol shoots his jumpers. I think it's a little bit lower than his release point, but it's something I could definitely project out to him being able to hit jumpers from the elbow, from, you know, the short corners, things like that. And that's a valuable skill for a 6'11" power forward. He can be in pick and pops. He can roll short rather than all the way to the rim. And You touched on his, you know, his ability to glide and his long strides, and that's something that once coaches teach him how to use his body and really set strong screens and roll at the right moment, I think he could be really dangerous as a pick and roll man, and that gives more to his game than just as a rim runner. But like you said, if the motor's there, he should be fine in NBA, but he's got to be willing to score those dirty points, so to speak. He's got to get in there, score offensive rebounds. And sometimes that's not something that young guys are really looking to do, because if you think about it, he was just in college for 1 year. Before that, he was in high school where, I mean, he was featured in his offense. It's just it's a vastly different change year over year. And this will just be year two basically removed from high school. And it's something that it might just take some time to adjust for him to a new role and kind of playing down and dirty and just getting down there, scrapping, getting offensive rebounds, running the rim on fast breaks, getting, you know, 10, 12, 14 points a game that way, as opposed to being fed in the post or being found and picking pops. That was more of his role at Michigan State than being featured in the offense. And I mean, that's because Michigan State had some tremendous ball handlers, and Tom Izzo really wanted the ball in their hands. So he had to be used in a different way. So I think that's another reason. Izzo's system did not really help us be able to tell what he'll be able to do at the NBA level, because we didn't really get to see the full use of his talents, I wouldn't say. He hardly took any jump shots. He was okay at the ones he did take, but there's not a lot to pull from there. And it's in the post, you rarely see him do more than a simple turnaround. And he's got decent touch in the post, but he's going to need more moves than that, even though he is crazy long. And he can probably get that hook shot off over people. But you're going to want to see some variations there. You're going to want to see some up and under, some up and step throughs, things like that. And that's footwork that's taught every day by these coaches. So that's not something I'm incredibly concerned about, particularly someone so young as him. But right now, I don't think he's going to be ready to contribute offensively for maybe 2-3 years. And that worries me, because you worry, again, is he going to be another Grizzlies player that you're not really sure what you have in him by the time you have to make a decision about whether to keep him or move on.
Right. No, that's completely fair. And it's almost unfair for us to even comment. Like, so we've seen the hook shot. Like, we think the right-handed hook, that's probably going to be okay. The jump shot, that looks okay enough to develop, you know, down the road. But the post moves, like you were saying, we don't even have enough to say, like, he has a rudimentary post skill set. Like, it's not even – we can't even really comment on it, because, I mean, he got
so
few touches.
Right, all you can say is you didn't see it.
Yeah, right, exactly. So who knows?
But just because you didn't see it doesn't mean he doesn't have
raw.
It.
True. No, you're absolutely right. And that's where it comes. We keep going back to it. It's going to be up to David Fizdale and those guys to really find out what Davis has and then just keep adding on top of it. So let's talk about the two things that I love about Deonta Davis, and I think anybody that scouted him loves about Deonta Davis, and that's his post defense, or really just defense in general, and then his rebounding. I'll just let you go ahead. Like, you just fire away. You can pick defense, you pick rebounding, just go. I've got plenty of things to say, but I feel like I've talked too much.
I'll pick his defense. I think if you just watch him and his instincts to slide over and just block shots out of almost nowhere, it's really impressive, particularly from a young kid. He does so without fouling, which is important. That's something a lot of young guys struggle with when they come to the league, is getting that timing right, because guys are a little bit quicker. He's already pretty quick. I don't worry about that as much with him. I think he should be able to adapt there and be fine contesting shots at the rim. And the Grizzlies, that's something they need in the big right now. They've got Marc Gasol, who, of course, he's not a shot blocker, but he's a guy who can protect the rim for you and play some post defense. But the Grizzlies don't really have anybody exactly like Davis. So I think he is a guy who we could be excited about as a big-time shot blocker and someone who's able to affect the game in that way. So a guy the Grizzlies haven't had like that in quite some time, really. And he's quick, he's agile, he can jump through the roof. All good things that you like from a guy as a shot blocker. And I don't know about his positioning. I think he's going to have to work on that a little bit, as far as just defending the post one-on-one and staying strong down there. But that will come, like I said, getting him in a strength and conditioning program. He'll be able to hold more of his own. He'll learn how to, you know, funnel players towards the help defense rather than isolating himself, not on purpose, of course. But there's a lot to like there. But talk to me a little bit about his rebounding. What do you see when you watch that?
I see a guy who is not afraid to put a body on someone, which makes me think that the motor is maybe a little bit overstated, because usually when guys you talk about someone that doesn't have a great motor, you see that on when they're called on the blockout, and that's something that I see him do consistently on both ends of the basketball court. Like, he is someone that I think from day one in the NBA, teams are going to have to focus on him as a guy on the offensive glass, because he did it too much at Michigan State, where he would just – he has a nose for the basketball. I think there is it is a legitimate skill to have a nose for the basketball in rebounding, and I see that with Deonta Davis. I mean, you see when a shot goes up, he immediately notices the angle of the shot, and he will begin to position his body to get around someone, to put himself in the right position where the ball is going to come off, or where the ball should come off most of the time. So, you know, if a shot comes from the right wing, you'll see him maybe sliding over to the left side to try to get that putback. And he's so big and so explosive off the floor that teams have got to focus on him, or he's going to kill them on the offensive glass. I mean, I think he averaged 4.5 offensive rebounds per 40 minutes, something like that. It was great. I mean, he's already a great offensive rebounder. You expect him to probably be in the paint a lot. I think he's probably going to project as more of a 5 than a 4, especially with the way the NBA is going. I see him as a really, really good 5 in a few years, assuming he continues to develop. And so he's already going to be around the basket. And with his ability, or his willingness, I guess, to go and find the body and block him out, I think that his defensive rebounding should have no problem. So I already see him literally from day one. For whatever reason, the Grizzlies needed to play him. I think you could throw him out there and feel okay that, all right, he's not going to get as much on the offensive end. We know that going in, he's going to rebound, he's going to defend. And to your point on defense, the one thing that just made my jaw drop watching him was he'd be playing one-on-one post defense, and he could block a man's shot while he's doing a post move on him. And that's just something that, like, you can count on one hand how many guys in the NBA can do that. It's not a lot. Like, that shot blocking rim protection, I think it is a borderline, like, one day could become elite. Like, it's good. I mean, it is as good as anybody that was coming out in this draft. He may be the best projected rim protector of anyone out of this draft. So, what do you have to say about that? The rebound and kind of the defense.
To go back to his instincts, I think that is the biggest reason I was shocked that he fell out of the first round, just because his instincts are already so incredible for a kid who's just going to be 19 years old and entering his first NBA season. And instincts are really something that coaches can't do much to teach. You can teach technique
right, wherever
that's lacking, but instincts are something that they're just usually there or they're not. And he's got that. So I really do think he's going to be a guy who's going to just kill people on the offensive and defensive glass. Like you said, his long arms, I think his motor's fine. I didn't really touch on that. I don't, just from watching him in games, I don't see the issues, but it makes me wonder, because so many have commented on it, if people are gathering this from, you know, workouts or from interviewing his coaching staff in Michigan State or his coaching staff in high school, gathering that intel that way, because I don't see it when I watch him on the court, but I don't think they're getting that from just nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Because I, over the course of just talking to you, I feel like I've talked myself out of him having any motor issues. So where is that coming from? And you're right. Like, that's, these teams, they do their due diligence. I mean, they will go talk to your coach, your high school coach, your whoever, like your guidance counselor from seventh grade, like whoever they can talk to that will tell you about you as a person if they could, you know, maybe say, okay, how's this going to translate on the basketball court? They'll talk to him. And so obviously someone has said he's got a questionable motor. I'm with you. I haven't necessarily seen it, but we'll see. I mean, I guess that's one of those things. We'll just have to watch him. The summer league games he's going to be able to play, and that's something, you know, he's at least going to miss the first three with plantar fasciitis.
And that's frustrating. It's
terrible.
Go ahead.
It is. I was just going to say, but if you have any comments, go ahead. I was just going to ask you what you kind of think, if any, his role will be next year.
I think he's going to honestly sit the bench most of the year. Unlike Wade Baldwin, I don't see as clear of a path to playing time for him, given that the big slots are mostly set. I think his offensive game might not be there enough yet to just put him out on the court and let him sink or swim. With that said, I'd be perfectly fine giving him minutes. I'm perhaps a little bit cynical in this way, but I don't always understand why good teams refuse to play young talent just because they are good. I don't know how much, even though the Grizzlies have made really savvy moves, I don't know how much I believe that they're a contender. I think they are a top, you know, maybe four or five team in the West, but what does that mean when the Warriors just went out and signed Kevin Durant, Zaza Pachulia? I mean, so with that said, given that I don't think the Grizzlies are coming out of the West, I think it's in their best interest to develop as much talent on the roster as possible, if that makes sense. So I'm okay with him getting minutes, but I don't think the minutes will be there for him this season.
One thing that I've heard people throw out is the possibility of dangling Brandon Wright as a trade chip. Because as it stands right now, they've got six big men. I think you have Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Brandon Wright, Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin, Deonta Davis. Yeah, six big guys, and really four can play. I mean, ideally, you'd really give, you know, three guys the bulk of the minutes and then have a fourth big that, you know, maybe plays 10 minutes a game. But they've got six, and three of those guys you'd really like to begin to develop. I mean, I know that Jermichael Green's a little bit older, but he's young in terms of NBA experience. So I think you'd ideally like at least one of those guys to be getting the fourth big spot and getting those 10, 12, maybe even 15 minutes a game to start developing someone. What's your comfort level with trading someone like a Brandon Wright as, you know, here we are at the last, you know, Mike Conley, as the recording of this podcast, which is late Thursday night, Mike Conley is probably going to wait to sign his contract. I believe the Grizzlies are going to introduce Chandler Parsons on Friday. He's going to go ahead and sign his contract. But they're going to make Mike wait and try to use the remaining, whatever, $7, $8 million in cap space. And I've heard Brandon Wright dangled out there. It's, okay, well, could we look to move him and then maybe take back a bigger contract someone's looking to get off? What's your comfort level with doing something like that? Because he was hurt most of last year. In theory, he's a great, you know, he's a great third big, basically, on this team. But what's your comfort level with trying to dangle him out there?
The biggest reason I would be sad to see him go is because we never really got to see what he could be with Mike Conley in the pick and roll.
Right.
Mike Conley's never had a hard roll man like Brandon Wright next to him before, and there were flashes of how good they could be when they were both healthy, but they were both healthy so very rarely last season at the same time. And so coming off of a significant injury, I'm okay with the Grizzlies dangling him out there, and I'm okay with – I don't think he really fits into the Grizzlies' window of a long-term plan trying to hit that, you know, next cycle if you're projecting out when the Grizzlies could be competitive again after this Gasol-Conley window. Of course, I don't think he fits into that. I'm okay. It depends on what you're going to get back for him, of course, same as any trade, but – if that frees up minutes for a young guy like Deonta Davis so you can figure out what you actually have in a potentially very valuable asset, I'm okay with that, to get rid of a role player who never really found – he in his playing time last season, he didn't really find the right role, and that might have been a Jaeger problem. Who knows? Fizdale might use him differently and in a better way that better suits him, better suits the squad. But up to this point, the fit hasn't been as great as you would have hoped when he was signed. But there's clearly talent there with Brandon Wright, but coming off an injury, he's an unknown like many other guys coming off of injury for the Grizzlies, and maybe you do try to deal him for a shooting guard or for picks, and if you can do that, I'm perfectly fine with dangling him out there.
Yeah, it's weird because I'm someone who's kind of and you're right there too. We both kind of beat the drum of, you know, let's get these young guys in, but you know, it's just so frustrating. We've touched on it time and time again. I know at least I have plenty of times on this podcast writing about it on Twitter, whatever. It's so frustrating not letting these young guys play. But that being said, I'm kind of with you in that I guess I'm okay with it, but I would hate to see Wright go without seeing, you know, and what he and Conley can do together. Because I think when Brandon Wright was in Dallas, he and Vince Carter had such a great pick and roll chemistry. Like it was incredible what both those guys were able to do. Because Carter is so good at shooting off a screen. So if you went under, you know, here's Carter pulling up. If you hedged too hard, you know, here's Carter maybe slipping it. And then there's Brandon Wright for the lob, or he can pull up. They could beat you in so many different ways. And so Conley is so good operating and pick and roll, it wouldn't stink. But at the same time, like, they have a dilemma. Like, this is very real. Like, I don't think you can carry six bigs, especially when you could legitimately vouch for all six getting minutes. Like, Jarrell Martin showed enough for me last year to think, okay, like, you could maybe count on him as a fourth big this year. Deontay Davis, I would love to know what you have there, because I think he was really good coming out in the draft, although I don't know. Let me ask you this then. Would you be okay with Deontay Davis just sitting the whole year in Iowa?
I would, because I think he's still going to get some of the development he needs there. Of course, he's not going to get NBA minutes, but as I've already touched on, I don't think those minutes, given how many bigs the Grizzlies currently have, if nothing changes, he's not going to get minutes anyway. So he might as well sit in Iowa and at least play somewhere for a professional coaching staff where he can be more of a central focus of development than he would be for the Grizzlies. Not that he wouldn't be getting personal development in Memphis, but much less of the focus is going to be on him if he's at the end of the bench than if he's a guy who's being featured in the starting lineup, presumably, for the D-League squad.
Yeah. All right, any final thoughts on Deontay Davis before we move on?
I think I've basically touched on everything I want to touch on with him.
Perfect. How much have you gotten to watch of Rade Zagorac? I know that it's not quite as easy to get tape on him, although he did play with a couple other guys that got drafted this year, Megalex. But it's a great story, that team that's basically a European team in Serbia that is owned by an agency group. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is it's owned by an agency group. They have an age limit of like 23, and basically their whole thing is you come here when you're 17, 18 years old, there's very clear path to playing time, and we can hopefully develop you into an NBA prospect in a couple of years. And it's worked. I know Boban, who's with the Spurs, played there. Nikola Jokic, who's with the Nuggets, played there. Obviously, Timothy Luwawu was there. Zagorac. I mean, they've had tons of guys drafted over the last few years. So we feel okay. I mean, I think you and I are both on the same page. Rade's not coming over this year, and it may not even be next year, right? Like, he's clearly drafted with the intent of drafting Stats. Yeah, okay.
Right, but that's okay given his situation.
Right. Exactly. That was my point. You feel okay about that because he is playing for an organization that literally their whole basically reason for existence is to develop young players and get them drafted into the league. So I feel okay about that. I feel okay about leaving him there. How much have you gotten to watch of him since he's been drafted, I guess?
I've watched a few games of his. Of course, being on the same team as Luwalu, I couldn't miss his film. So I've seen a little bit of him. I like what I see. It's tough to say when or if the Grizzlies are going to bring him over. That timeline is not exactly clear, but there are a lot of tools to like. First and foremost, my God, is he just freakishly long.
Yeah.
I don't
know an official wingspan, but you can just look at it on tape. Like, that dude's big, and he's long.
He's like a 6'9", very fluid ball handler. He's doing, like, sham guides and, like, in and outs and, like, really, really sophisticated stuff for a guy that big.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you watch him, like, he's already better in pick and rolls than Wade Baldwin is. Like, light years better.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel so comfortable with
him
as a secondary ball handler. Yeah.
Absolutely. He explodes, and he can get his own shot out of the pick and roll. He's not afraid to pull up. He can get all the way to the hole in just two steps, basically, because his strides are so long. He's incredibly athletic. Shooting stroke is nice. There's a whole lot to like there. He's a great draft and stash pick because, like we said, he's not a European guy who's on a club he's only getting maybe 9 or 10 minutes a game. I mean, he's getting major minutes.
Right.
He's going to be developed by a professional coaching staff of sorts. And that's important that the Grizzlies get that basically free development. I mean, they don't have to waste a roster spot on him. And maybe they can bring him over in a couple years when he's even more polished than he already is now, which is, you know, a very valuable asset to have.
No, I absolutely agree. I do want to ask you, how confident are you in his ability to at some point develop as a spot-up jump shooter? Because at this point, it looks like he can do it. He's not great at it, but he's much better, I think, in pull-up situations where he has the ball in his hands. He's very good coming off.
Oh, yeah.
Pick and rolls and pulling up. Like, we know that's good. Like, that's already there. What's your confidence level in him one day turning into at least a guy who you have to respect off of the catch and shoot?
Well, the shooting stroke is there. Without having seen him run off of screens and move a lot off the ball and get into those catch and shoot positions, it's tough to say how good of a three-point shooter in those situations he'll be, but just judging from the stroke, I'm okay with saying he's going to be a pretty good three-point shooter. And we can say he's not going to get his shot blocked or have much of a problem shooting over length, I would say. And that's dependent on who they match up with him, but there aren't going to be that many guys that big who are going to be able to stay in front of him.
No, you're absolutely right. The one thing, I guess, that is a concern, because he already possesses so many things on offense, so many tools on offense. So, like, I guess the one thing is defensively, it's got to come a long way. Like, it does. I haven't gotten to watch a ton, but the what I've been able to see, it's going to have to come a long way. Like, his feet are not great on defense. He does not do a great job staying in front of guys. He's not necessarily a great rebounder. He's not bad. He's not great. But just based on the few things I've been able to see where he's the ball handler, or I'll tell you, to be honest, like, when he gets out in transition, like, that's it. Like, if he gets in a two-on-one, whether he has the ball in his hands or not, like, he's going to finish. Like, it gets me excited watching. Any time I was watching Megalex and I saw them out on the break and here comes Zagorot, you know he's going to be able to finish. That's one thing I do like about him. He's a good finisher at the rim already. So there are things that need to progress in his game, but I think, you know, you'd agree, there's at least a rough outline of a pretty good ball-handling wing who's going to be able to shoot and be a good offensive player and need to come a little ways on defense.
There is, and I'd like to go back to the defense for a second. I think where his height helps him and his size helps him offensively. I think it hinders him a little bit defensively. He's so lanky and he doesn't know how to use his body on the wing as a guy that big defensively. He hunches over a little bit, and I think that makes his feet look worse than they might actually be. I think if someone can teach him how to move his upper body and use that energy properly, then his feet will come along and follow with. And I think that could help him a lot on that end. But there's still work to be done there. But there is a rough outline, like you said, of a guy who could be a useful NBA player. And the offensive tools are just – they're so fun to watch. And, of course, we get caught up – it's much easier to get caught up in offense than it is defense. And if he can never really fix his feet – and his ability to stay in front of people or lock in, then his offensive game won't matter. But as a guy that young, I'm okay with drafting a guy like that and hoping he can come along and really develop defensively over the next several years. And then you can get him into your team and really have something to work with from that point.
Last thing on Zaire Hachimura, I do want to talk a little bit about free agency. We'll have to do it quick. I've already kept you like way longer than I said I was going to. Do you project him as – okay, well, I think it's fair. We probably project him as a wing player. But do you see, with the way that he plays defense, do you see any chance that maybe teams use him as a stretch four on defense to defend fours because he might not ever be quick enough to defend a wing?
I think so. And with the way the NBA is moving, there are many more fours, I think, that he would be able to defend. So I think he could potentially be passable in that way. I don't know how good of a rebounder he is, honestly. So maybe that's an area where I need to do a little more research and see how he could fit if he's guarding fours in that way, so you could have – two guys around the rim more so than just maybe a one big as a center. But there are some creative things you can do defensively to hide him if he never gets that footwork right. But if he doesn't, it is going to be an uphill battle for him to ever see meaningful minutes at the NBA level, just because he's going to have to be able to guard a position on a nightly basis, not just selectively. And right now, he can't do that.
Just playing with Deontay Davis. Deontay rebounds for three people. It's fine. Like, it's okay. We can play Roddy and Deontay as your 4-5, and Deontay will just turn to Roddy and be like, it's cool. Don't even worry about it. I got you. Like,
I'm willing to do that for sheer entertainment value.
Any comments on the Jay Lin, whatever his name is, Wang Ji Lin from China?
Absolutely not. I would be lying if I said I knew much of anything about him at this point. So I'm not even going to pretend. He's almost a complete unknown to me, and I've got to get in and do my work on him. But I would just be doing the people a great disservice if I act like I knew anything about him right now.
You don't have the Chinese Basketball Association League Pass. You aren't watching Jay Lin.
You know, I really don't. I wouldn't even know how to begin to go about finding that. So it's something that I don't even know. I don't know much about him at all.
Two true stories about him, and then we'll move to the off season. I basically compiled like four scouting reports. Once I, on draft night, I figured out everyone that the Grizzlies were going to take, and then, just basically tried to give people like a fundamental understanding of each one of these guys. And I literally, like, Jay Lin was not ranked in my top 100. I had never heard of him. So I went to YouTube and just Googled his name. And so I saw him play. First off, he plays on the same CBA team as Al Harrington, or at least he did at one point. So that was awesome. That was fun to see. And then I also saw Jay Lin give our old buddy Hamed Haddadi buckets on about four or five different highlights. So Both those things are great. So from what I can tell, he's big, he's slow. He's got like a C-plus post-game, and he'll probably be used to trade for Matt Barnes in 2020. So that's the best scouting report I can give you on Jay Lynch.
That's the biggest thing I've heard about him is just how slow he is, and
I
can't fathom somebody who's that slow really given the way the NBA is headed and kind of downsizing or at least shifting to quicker guys all across the board. I don't know. Maybe there could eventually be a fit for him somewhere. I mean, there's no reason to even talk about him ever coming over the Grizzlies because I think you and I both would agree that the likelihood of that is very slim. But, you never know. Crazier things have happened.
Hey, LeBron came back from 3-1 against the greatest regular season team of all time. So that way
sure.
Jay Lynch can play in the NBA. Anything's possible, like KG said. But
absolutely.
It's very unlikely at this point. Let's spend like 8 minutes talking about the offseason, then we'll get out of here. So the Memphis Grizzlies signed Chandler Parsons, and this had been brought up. Like even like 2 years ago, if you look at who's going to be a free agent 2016, you know, at this point we all know that the cap's going to spike. And I think just about every Grizzlies fan kind of looks at themselves and says, oh, well, you know, Chandler Parsons is a free agent. That'd be great to get that guy. But I don't think anyone thought that was realistic. I know that I certainly did not. Chandler Parsons just does not seem like the dude who's hanging out in Memphis. Like, he seems like L.A., New York, Miami. Like, he's a big city kind of guy. Just he has that vibe. Also, why would he really leave Dallas? Like, Dallas seems like one of the best organizations in the league. It just, for a number of reasons, it did not make sense for Chandler Parsons to wind up in Memphis. But, listen, full credit to the Grizzlies, full credit to Chris Wallace, full credit to David Fizdale, J.B. Bickerstaff, Mike Conley, you know, all the guys that have been mentioned. They got it done. And I think, and I will get your thoughts on this, I think Chandler Parsons is, for what the Memphis Grizzlies have been looking for, I don't know, the last 5 years, pretty much ever since they got rid of Rudy Gay. Like, they've been looking for a player that is of that caliber, but that does not play like Rudy Gay, that basically plays the way Chandler Parsons plays. I mean, is that fair?
Absolutely. I think he's a guy, he's not going to hurt you defensively. He's not, maybe not going to help you a ton. He's probably average, maybe a little above average defensively, but offensively, he's such a prolific scorer, and he can do it in a number of ways. He's a guy, finally, the Grizzlies have a guy who can be a secondary ball handler, who can be a bigger guy who can serve in pick and rolls. And I mean, he's really good in pick and rolls, not just okay. I mean, he's good in them. He can turn the corner, get all the way to the rim with long strides. He's very crafty, can shoot floaters off of one leg. He can pull up, of course, if his man goes under screen. He's an underrated passer, I think. There's so much to like in this pick and roll game. And of course, one of the things I think is very interesting about him is his prolific three-point shooting ability. This is going to be a real test. I think it's I forget who it was. Somebody, and I think it's an interesting point, has talked about maybe it's not as much the Grizzlies don't have good three-point shooters. Maybe that's part of it, but maybe it's that the Grizzlies' offensive system does not produce good threes. And that's something that I tend to agree with, but we don't know, of course, what Fizdale's system is going to look like. But I think it's safe to assume a rough outline, given that the key players in Cumming and Gasol are going to be back, and you know the offense is primarily going to be working through those guys. And now with your third cog, Chandler Parsons, in there, it's going to maybe look a little different. But I think you can basically tell what it's going to look like. But it's going to be really interesting to watch him and see if he's as good from the perimeter and getting those good three-point looks and knocking them down as he has been elsewhere. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think that is a very good point and a very valid point as well. What is your – like, where are we on the – this scares the freaking shit out of me that we just gave Chandler Parsons a max contract and we have no idea how bad his knees are. Like, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 there? With 10 being, I cannot believe we just did that.
Probably a 2 or a 3 just because –
Okay, good.
You do, you do worry about his knees. You worry about anybody who's having reported issues like that. But honestly, given what the Grizzlies could have gotten to fill out their wing positions, he's legitimately the best they could have gotten when healthy. So I just don't know how you can fault the Grizzlies for going out and getting a guy that seemingly fits like a glove next to your other two best players. It makes so much sense. It makes them competitive for the next several years at least. Probably a really good team if they all stay healthy. There's just no way for me to really knock this. And if his knees go bad, they go bad. I mean, so be it. You took an educated gamble. Things didn't pay off. But can really respect the vision here.
I completely agree. It's an all-in move, and it's a move that I think that absolutely had to be made. Like you said, if it doesn't work out, at least you tried. Like, and that's the thing. It's like their hand is forced a little bit with the way that they've traded draft picks. They've got basically two of their next three or four picks, first-round picks, are going to have to go out beginning next year. So you had to do something, and this is as good as you could have done. I thought you said it perfectly. This is as good as you could have done. Like, this was the best-case scenario, and I think that every Grizz fan should just be happy he chose Memphis over Portland. Mike Conley, max, full five-year max. You could do a whole podcast about how ridiculous it was that, like, NFL writers were – like, just I don't even know. Like, I don't even
don't
have words to
describe. Don't get me started on Edward.
I know.
Don't get me started.
Oh my, I know. It was ridiculous. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. I'm assuming that you really don't have much of an issue at giving Mike Conley the full 5 year max. Am I right?
No, because like with Chandler Parsons, he was the Grizzlies' best option at that position, and he already has so much loyalty to Memphis. The fans already have so much loyalty to him. You already know it's a good fit. It made sense for all parties. And it's just – it's ridiculous to talk about the money. I mean, it's almost irrelevant here. And it's tough to say that much money is irrelevant, but given how much the salary cap skyrocketed up and really what else the Grizzlies could have done with that money, I don't see the point in complaining about it at all.
Totally with you, 100%. A move I like, at least, like, just grabbing the flyer on a guy that they had before, James Ennis. They got him at 2 years and $6 million. It's a room exception, basically. I love it. Look, it's a no-risk, basically no-risk, high-reward, or, decently high-reward on a player that I think at least has potential to stick in the league. Like, he had a great last 9 games in New Orleans. Just kind of scouting him. I didn't do a ton of scouting on him at Long Beach, but once he got into the league, I started to become more familiar with him. Basically, he takes almost all his shots either at the rim or he's shooting a three. He was given basically zero chance in Memphis to prove that. And really, there might not be a ton of minutes available for him, but I think the way that the wings are, like, who knows? Like they may be counting on Andrew Harrison and Wade Baldwin to be playing the two, because who knows if Jordan Adams is even going to play this year. You've already got Parsons. You could easily slide down to four if you needed to, although that's already kind of mosh pit anyway. So, but at least I think that you could envision a scenario where if you wanted to give James Ennis a shot to develop, you could do it. Plus, you've already got David Fizdale, who's very familiar with him in his time at Miami. I like taking the flyer on him. What are your thoughts?
When the Grizzlies got James Ennis the first time with Chalmers, I believe I said something to the effect of, I think we might should be more excited about acquiring Ennis and Chalmers. And that turned out to be stupid because Chalmers turned out to be much better in Memphis than I thought he would be, which I didn't think he would
be
bad. I didn't think he would be as good as he was. So I'm just full disclosure here. I mean, I'm owning up to what I said. But like you said, the Grizzlies never gave James Ennis a shot. But I think there is a lot to like. There have been apparently his defense is thought of as a concern. I think multiple coaches have said that about him. But he's got the athleticism, certainly, to be good on that end. He's got the length. If he can get that down, I think he takes, like you said, his shots are from the most efficient spots on the floor. There, I think he could really be a guy who could fit as a 3-and-D guy in the league. And I think he could be a really valuable asset, particularly on that cheap of a contract. And I think it's a great move by the Grizzlies just to kind of start rounding out the roster and just bringing in younger guys who are kind of undervalued at this point because – and it's kind of funny that the Grizzlies were able to bring him in. I think in part they were able to bring him in for so cheap because they just didn't use him when they had him. So –
yeah,
they kind of lowered his value a little bit, in my opinion, but and made it easier for them to sign him for cheaper. But I think that's a great signing, and I think he's a guy. Hopefully, this go around, given his familiarity with Fizdale, hopefully he'll get more of a shot than he did under Jaeger.
Last question, and we'll get out of here. I'm disappointed we didn't get to spend like 5 minutes talking about Knoxville because I was there. Wow, I guess it's been like 5 months since I've been to Knoxville. But I tried some new barbecue place, and it was help me remember the name. So it's across the river from Neyland Stadium, and I ate on like a little screened-in porch. Does that ring a bell at all? Like a little barbecue joint? It was kind of like a sugary seasoning almost. Like I had never tried anything quite like that.
I don't know. We have some weird barbecue places here. And also, I'll say this. I live downtown because I work downtown, and barbecue places are sprouting up left and right. In the last year, there have been three to open downtown. And this side of the river, I don't know that I've ever eaten at the place that you were talking about, but there are some different tastes here in Knoxville because if you think about it, there are some people trying to, you know, replicate Memphis barbecue. Then you have, of course, we're close to North Carolina, so you bring in some of that.
Right.
So there's certainly some different flavors here.
It was different. Like, I think Knoxville, like, maybe a little bit of an underrated barbecue place. That's coming from, like, listen, I'm born and raised here in Memphis. Like, I've eaten some Memphis barbecue since I was in diapers. And it was good. I'll have to ask my friend. I stayed with one of my friends down there, and it was great. And definitely next time I'm there, I'll be there. Like, the hype is real for football. I'm going to be at as many Tennessee football games as I possibly can. We'll definitely –
We'll have to link up next time you're up here.
That's what I'm saying. We'll definitely make that happen. I do want to ask you before we run, though. I hate when I'm talking to someone and they ask me, like, okay, what are the Grizzlies going to do next? Like, make a prediction. What's their next move going to be? Like, nobody knows. Predictions are mostly dumb. So I'm not going to ask you that. I'm going to ask you, what type of move would you like the Grizzlies to make before they sign Conley? So basically, before they sign Conley, somewhere between $7 and $8 million in cap space. If you stretch Vince Carter, I think you can get even maybe another million on top of that. Like, what type of move? Like, is there someone out there you'd like them to sign, or would you rather them, you know, kind of scrounge the trade market, see what they can get? What type of move?
Really, just to keep the flexibility there. I think I'd rather them have, you know, scrounge the trade market. I think if you sign that free agent, it's fine, but I think you're kind of locking yourself in there, and I think the Grizzlies might have enough to go on now to eke out enough minutes at the two from guys who aren't actually twos, and maybe that's a non-answer. I don't know. I don't really know what I want the Grizzlies to do at this point. I know they still have a couple holes in the roster, and notably no matter what they do, they need to go out and find somebody, I think, who's a pure two, just because, I mean, who's going to be playing those minutes now? I mean, are you going to put Tony Allen at the two? I mean, sure, he can guard twos, but he doesn't play like a two offensively at all. I mean, he doesn't
right.
do anything that twos within the systems of NBA offenses do. I mean, he's not running off a screen. He's not curling. He's not – I mean, he's cutting primarily. He's not spotting up. I mean, I don't know. He doesn't fit the mold of a two. And there are things you can do to get creative with your offense and maybe shift Chandler Parsons into some of those roles that a two might play and just shift them to fit more the three in your offensive system. But, you know, I don't know. Back to your question, I really don't know. I haven't given it too much thought since the Grizzlies locked up Conley and Parsons. I've been, I guess, a little too giddy about that. Just, you know, the Grizzlies should have a good team, a fun team, a different team than we've had in years past to watch going forward. And that's exciting. Hopefully a team that can get up and down and at least spread the floor a little bit more, be a little bit more versatile offensively finally after, I mean, it's been so many years we've been hoping for that. And whatever kind of move the Grizzlies can make to accomplish that goal, I'm all in on that.
Andrew, you are a good man for doing this, for staying up so late. I really appreciate it. Is there anything that you want to plug? I don't know if you got anything coming down the pipe that you want to plug.
Let's see. At Upside Motor, pretty soon, I think starting next Wednesday, I'm going to take a prospect a week, and I'm going to break down their biggest weakness on film and how they can improve that weakness and make it at least, if not into a strength, something that's not hurting them tremendously. So that should be fun. I don't know how many I'll do. I don't plan on doing all 60 players that were drafted, but I do plan on doing a significant amount of players, hopefully most everybody in the first round. So that's something I'm at least looking forward to doing.
Yeah, no, that'll be fun. Listen, I'm a big fan of the draft coverage. So, and listen, like you could write about the NBA draft at any point. Like I'm consuming it. I don't care. I'm already looking forward to the 2017 draft. You can follow me on Twitter at AndrewFord22. Andrew, thanks a bunch, man. We'll definitely do this again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chip.